Hey, this is Brandon Straza, founder of The Success Finder. I've been in sales most of my life and have learned a thing or two about getting myself and others to sell at a higher level. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to The Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to The Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. So my special guest with me today is Brandon Straza. So Brandon founded his company called The Success Finder. And it wasn't until recently, he says 2.5 years ago, that he really felt comfortable calling himself an entrepreneur, which is interesting when people like him started relatively young and early in sales and then ended up in business. And it's always an interesting transition. What's fascinating, I think this is going to be fun because anyone who knows me, I came from a little different background. He started selling at a young age, as he tells it, and I'm sure we're going to talk. He was selling like sugar mixed with Kool-Aid packets to other kids early on in his childhood and later realized that school wasn't for him. He went down that path, realizing sales came very natural, especially when combined with a desire to actually help people and help solve their problems, help his customers succeed. And so this should be lots of fun. Brandon, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey, Jason, I appreciate you having me here. And I just look forward to giving whatever knowledge or whatever I've learned to your listeners. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I think this should be fun because, again, I said this in the beginning, you had a different path than me. I came from a non-sales background, anti-sales background. Turns out I actually did some selling, but it was just because I had to, like school fundraising and going door to door, but it wasn't because I liked it or wanted to do it. Yet you realized early. Did you realize it at the time you liked sales, or was it just in retrospect you're like, oh man, I've been selling for a long time?
No, I didn't realize it. My first experience of selling per se, which was I was taking Kool-Aid packets, which just came in a little rectangular thing, and I would mix those with sugar. So I was selling sugar on sugar to the neighborhood kids. Now, here's the thing. The neighborhood kids loved it, sugar on sugar, and the flavor was just delicious. Parents hated me, just absolutely hated me. And I think I was selling it for like a quarter, 50 cents a packet, depending on whatever it was. But I think I realized the first time that I was actually selling and didn't like it. And the only reason you jogged my memory was around the same time, and it was for selling school products. Maybe you would sell candy bars. You would go around door to door and sell whatever the candy bars were. I absolutely disliked that because I felt that I was selling. Offering a service to someone on something that they wanted that they were going to pay for felt like I wasn't selling. But trying to hawk a candy bar down someone's throat that I was having to go door to door and didn't know whether they wanted it or not, felt like I was using my cuteness or kid factor, and I felt like I was selling. So the parallels between those two, I didn't like feel like I was selling, whereas if I was offering something, then it was something that they needed.
So let's stay on this for a little bit because I think it's super fun and off the reservation for what I thought we would go with this, which is totally fine. We do what we want here on the Authentic Persuasion Show. So I think that's fascinating because I'm thinking about my own experiences and how that felt. And it's different going to someone's door, asking them to buy, wanting them to buy really for some benefit of your own or requirement of your own, and doing cold calling, right? And how that feels. And then also like, I have to do this fundraising or I want to win this prize for the fundraising. So I need you to buy it instead of like, hey, if you want this Kool-Aid packet, I've got it, but I don't care either way.
Yeah. And I did. I've done cold calling and I've gotten over that one. So decades later, I ended up in cold calling. But when I was offering the sugar packets to the kids, I'm like, well, this is something that they want. They love the sweetness. They want this. They're coming to me and asking me for this. And I saw what I thought was the benefit, making people happy. But when it came to the school saying, hey, go sell this, you could win this. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see where the funds went to. Like in my mind, I couldn't see whatever I was selling, what was the true benefit and who was really getting it? I couldn't wrap my head around it. Even if they explained it, I probably couldn't have wrapped my head around it. But I'm like, where's the end game? Where's this really going? And so that's where I felt door knocking and saying, hey, would you please buy this candy so we can raise money for the school that I don't know where it's going? That's why it felt salesy to me. And I just didn't like that. So, I mean, that was really the early groundwork for me understanding sales and how to conceptualize and how to accept an offer versus a push.
Where do you see this translating, especially what you said about doing the sales, the candy bar fundraiser, wrapping paper, calendar sales, and it just going into the corporate machine and not having an understanding or an awareness of where it really goes and being in touch with that? Do you see that in companies happening as well, where people are just like selling, but they don't really know why they're selling other than just to have a job?
Absolutely. And I think you lose your appreciation for what you're doing and the person on the other line, because a lot of that's done through phone. When you have that and you're selling in a corporate environment and you're just dialing for dollars, the person on the other end, as I call it, is tonality. You can hear their tone, whether they really want to be doing what they're doing because they know what's their why.
Yeah.
Versus someone that's sitting on the other line. And I had a conversation with someone this morning, and I don't get on the phone for sales that much anymore because it's just not where my highest and best value is. But the person on the other line could hear the fact that what I was trying to explain and help and offer to them, if they went and came to my company, great. If not, because I knew what value we brought and the obstacles they were having and that were outside of their control, if they didn't come to us, they knew that that door and that opportunity would be available in the future. And I wasn't chasing them. Like, I wasn't sitting there and saying, okay, I'm going to win this award. I'm going to win this prize, the commission on this for you coming over here. That's what it wasn't about. I had built up enough to where if they come with us, great. If not, and you got a question in 6 months, reach out to us. We're still going to be here. I'm not chasing them. And they could hear the sincerity in my voice and knowing that I was looking out for their best interests and wanting to help them.
And I think that's such an important shift. I love that you said it that way. It's like, you're not chasing them. You understand the value. You know that it could be a good fit. You know that you would want them on board, let's say as a client, and your job isn't to twist arms and chase them. Convince, persuade, help them understand the value, whatever terms people want to use, but chase and push into it. That's where salespeople usually go sideways, in my opinion. That tone comes across. Prospective customers dislike that feeling of being pushed, and it's very repelling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had it myself before. I was getting ready to interview someone on the podcast that we might talk a little bit about today, where the other person was a coach and they had a mastermind. And the first 5 minutes of us just getting to know each other was like, so what's your purpose and where do you want to go with this and what can I help you with? And they just kept selling and selling and selling. And I kept like gently diverting them, trying to give them the opportunity to kind of catch like, hey, we're not here to sell, like, and just gently nudging them this way, where most people would be like, hey, listen, I don't want what you got. Like, I'm not here for that. So I know when I'm being pitched, I know when I'm being sold. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it. So if I know that, trust me, I'm not the sharpest crane in the box.
Yeah.
I think differently. And so all the other sharper cranes in the box, they know when you're selling as well. It's so apparent, so obvious. You want to sit there, have an offer, believe in what it can do and help them, and just talk, listen to what they're saying.
Yeah. And I think that's the challenge, is there's a lot of people in sales or in business, and they feel like that is the model, right? You have to be pushy. You have to go over the top. You have to be that insurance salesperson who every time they meet people, they have to talk about insurance and ask about insurance, right? Like, I had a guest on my podcast, Daniel Vanderkoy, recently, and he runs a brokerage. And he made it clear for himself and his team, our goal is to not be that weird guy at the barbecue. That's his mantra, right? That one word is always trying to sell and always trying to push. And for some reason, that's what people think they have to do to be successful versus literally what you're saying instead.
Yeah, it's really amazing when you just listen to the person, you try to get to know them, and we're like, I only got 10 minutes. My window for this is 10 minutes. There's a lot that can happen in 10 minutes. Number one, depending on how the sale came to you or how the prospect came to you. And I'm not a big fan of prospect, suspect, and sale, but however they came to you.
Yeah.
Most of the time they came to you, they reached out, someone said, hey, call Johnny over here. So the wall's already down. They're coming to you saying, I need something, but I need to know why I need this. Brokerage, insurance. I own a brokerage, an insurance company. Okay. they're calling us. They're asking, saying, hey, I need this home or I need this auto. All right, great. Half the battle's already done. They're already telling you what they want.
Right.
Just explain this, what it is. This is how we're going to take care of it. And when this goes wrong, we're going to take care of this. And then they'll give you their objections. Listen, 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 listen. You'll hear their pitch raise and lower, what's important to them or what they've been trained to ask. You'll know how to fight through the mud on that. And then just answer their questions. If they go with you, great. If not, there's so many people out there that are going to want what you have to do as long as you're being genuine and you're listening to what they need.
There's a whole bunch of things I want to bring up that we've been chatting about, but let's go backwards here. You talked about the potential customer. Let's just use that framework because I agree with you. Prospect, suspect, like all those, just everybody has different language. The questions they have been trained to ask. You're talking about the prospective customer, not the salesperson, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you mean by that?
We're trained to ask questions.
Okay. Where do you see that? What do
I mean by that? I mean, because here's the thing. Social media is more prevalent than ever. And so they're seeing sales pitches all the time. So then they're having conversations with their spouse or their friends or at the barbecue. And they're being pitched all the time. There's commercials all the time. And it tells you, like, the most common question, we'll go back to brokerage and insurance. Okay. Since you had someone on and I own a brokerage as well. It's, do I get that discount? Do I get this discount? Here's the easiest way to dispel any of that. No matter what industry you're in, when someone's saying, do I get this discount? Hey, Jason, I'd give you the high five discount if I could. And I actually, I'll do it in the air. They can't see me or anything, but here's the thing. People can hear you smile. So if they can hear you smile, they can feel that emotion when you're doing something. I'm like, hey, listen, Jason, I'd give you the high five discount if I could. But at the end of the day, I'm going to make sure you get everything possible that you need. And that is available to you. It ends the conversation. They've been trained to ask about these questions here. If you know that you're going to get that question, just figure out what your talk path is. I think talk paths are so important. And why I say that is, if you're ever questioned, and this was a sales coach of mine way back in the day and mentor, and he went to the extreme on this. If you're ever questioned a court of law on how you explain something, how you sold something, or what you're doing, if you say it the same way every time, you're genuine about it. It's not a script, but you say it the same way every time. You never have to question, did I tell Jason this and had my arms crossed? And did I tell Sally over here this? Like, which one did I tell? Which lie do I have to keep up with? Which talk path do I have to keep up with? Same talk path every time. It's not a script. It's just what you believe in. And you just understand how to go from point A to point B and know when those objections are coming. They've been trained to ask these objections because of social media, going to a barbecue, or listening to a commercial.
And I think that's so true. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't care about discounts. There's a lot of people who don't necessarily negotiate off price or might have those concerns. Yet, I could totally see it in the world of insurance brokerage, where literally that's all you see is this Geico insurance company will save you this much in this many minutes, right? I mean, that's all they've been saying for years. And so everyone's trained. It's like, okay, well, I switch insurance so I can get a discount. And this is discount. And then it just becomes this low price commodity. And I love what you said about handling it. And I think those chalk tracks are important. I think having that important. One of the biggest things is I've always been a fan of scripting, especially for new salespeople, so that they can be consistent and know that they said it and not rely on their memory for what did they say. Because inevitably, and this is what I'm always mitigating against, you said the court of law example, which I think is huge. And when they call back to cancel or when they call customer service and they say, Johnny didn't tell me about this, I know as a salesperson or just trainer, I know my person says that every single time. And then all we got to do is pull up the recording. Like, let's just take it to the footage and see what happened.
Yeah. I love when they're like, and this is back when I was training salespeople and sales teams, like, hey, Brittany told me this. And I'm like, listen, I could unequivocally guarantee you, Brittany, and I don't say it that way. I'm not going to be like, but in the back of my mind, this is what the little voice back here said. Brittany never said that. I guarantee you. When you're teaching salespeople or you want to be taught, I think, yes, scripts are great. I think what's even better is listen to the person's talk paths. Listen to the person that has been doing it and has those sales out there. Listen to those talk paths and then make them your own. Take what they're doing, write it down. They'll put it in a script for you and then make it your own because you don't want to speak like them because you aren't them. Mm-hmm. But they're successful for a reason because they created that process. And that process works. So don't try to recreate the wheel. There's sometimes when it's worthwhile recreating the wheel. then there's other times that it's not.
And of course, I totally agree, right? Which is part of what I focus on with the authentic persuasion piece, which is what's success for other people, but making it your own and not trying to copy someone else's style, not trying to be somebody else, because it's just long term, it's not going to work. It's acting, it's pretending. It's also some people, maybe they're lying to this customer, saying something to different people instead of just being natural. You mentioned in terms of listening to coworkers and other salespeople and picking their process up and then running with it. But what about listening? I think you mentioned earlier too, with listening to those prospective customers. Where do you see most salespeople going wrong or doing it wrong?
They don't care. The other person can hear it. We kind of already talked about this. Number one, the salesperson just doesn't care. This is an ends to a means. It's like, hey, listen, I'm doing this job so I can get to the next job. I'm doing this job to pay the rent. Now, I get that. It's great to pay the rent, and it's great to think of what that next job is. But the person on the other line is going to hear your tone and realize they really don't care. And then from there, what you had mentioned something about where it goes wrong, which is they can hear your tone. And then at the end of the day, if you're just hawking a product, they get too pushy. It's that coach before I started the podcast that is just pushing their product without, I don't even think that person knows they're pushing the product is the thing, but that's how they've been taught, is to go and solve a problem. It's great to solve a problem. That's why we're building the Success Finder. That's why we have the Mastermind Effect, is to solve a problem. But when you are selling to solve a problem, it feels super disingenuous and the person just doesn't want to work with you. I can tell you, if I go back to that episode where that person's selling me for the first 5 minutes before I even interview them and they're selling me, I probably wasn't on my A game because I was a bit annoyed and perturbed. Now, I still did a great job, made it sound good, but still it put me off before we even got to what we were there for. So don't be pushy. Don't push your product and make sure you care about what you're selling for. If you don't, find somewhere else to work. I don't want to sit there and say, hey, COVID has destroyed so many jobs and there's just, you got to work wherever you can. If you're in sales, that is the one industry that you can always find somewhere else to work. Hands down, sales is an industry that is always needed. And if you think about it, every person that says, hey, I'm not a salesperson, I say baloney. Here's why. When you get up in the morning, you have already sold yourself and convinced yourself that you need to brush your teeth, make your cup of coffee, and use the restroom for the first time. You don't have to think about it, but you've already sold yourself before you even get up, that these are the steps to me being successful this day. These are the steps that I need to do before I get ready to get my son or my daughter or my family ready. So you sell yourself. Everyone sells themselves every blessed day. Do I turn left or do I turn right? And why do I do that? So everybody out there to me is a salesperson. It's just in how they go about it and how they accept it in the back of their mind.
And so if we talk about that, the pushy side and that salesperson, yet generally, and it sounds like the experience you had is what a lot of people have, which is just that person's not listening, right? They're not picking up what you're putting down as far as what you really want or what you don't want. And is it, when your experience is just someone who's pushing, they're selling something, they're hawking instead of like trying to help somebody with a solution, and they just don't care what the other person thinks, right? Like, I have this solution, you should want it. I don't care about your feelings or your opinions because I have the solution to end all solutions. Yeah.
I have what you need, but they're a bulldozer. So let's take 10 people. And the bulldozer sits there and says, I'm going to bulldoze through 10 people because I need to dial for dollars. I need to pick up and keep going to the next person until I find the decision maker. So they say, out of 10 people, if I get two, I'm good. That just means I need to make 30 calls that day so I can get 6 sales. I'm going to bulldoze through them. What if you only needed to make 10 calls that day? And out of those 10 calls, you had 10 quality conversations. And out of those 10 calls, you got 4 sales the first day. And you're like, hey, but I need to be at 6. And so day 2, you're like, all right, I need to continue tweaking, perfecting things. So I'm going to make 15. And out of that, you get 7. And then you find your happy medium to where you get your 6 sales for the day. And these are all just arbitrary numbers, by the way, anyone. Like, you probably want more than 6 sales in a day in whatever you're doing. But if you sit there and have quality conversations, you're going to have fewer conversations. That's right, because they're going to last longer. But you're going to have real quality people that are probably not only, number one, going to refer you. How cheap is that? You didn't pay. You already paid. Your expenses were already met by that first conversation. They refer you over here. You don't even have to do a thing. They're like, hey, I trust my neighbor. I trust my barbecue buddy. But you can decrease the amount of calls that you have to make. if you're having quality conversations with the right people.
I love that so much about the quality conversations, which is the longer conversations and less volume, right? Versus the numbers game. Let me just give my pitch to 10 people or 100 people a day and see who bites and see who I can get past a minute with. And then that's really what the goal is. Versus, can I have 10 calls instead of 30, but have those 10 calls last significantly longer, see what's there, build relationships, close some now, close some later, get referrals later. And it's that talk time conversation length versus pure dialing for dollars.
Yeah. I mean, you're just picking up and picking up and picking up. And I get that. It works. And I think actually learning the wrong way is also helpful. You need to learn the wrong way. So when you're looking at your destination, so here's where you're at and here's where you want to go. And along the way, you're getting deviated. You're getting the noise right from outside. Well, you need to know the wrong thing. So if I go this way, how do I correct that? I don't want to overcorrect it so I don't go way too over this way. But if you learn the wrong way, along the way, that line becomes a lot straighter and you have less ebbs and flows in there. It's not a bad thing to learn the wrong way, because if not, you could make a monster mistake later on in your career and invest in the wrong person, the wrong place. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah, it's always more beneficial to make mistakes, learn the hard way, fall down and get back up earlier on in anything you're doing when the stakes are much lower, right? Whether it's life, whether it's business, instead of like just coming out of the gate, doing everything right, not really experiencing all the mistakes, thinking you're untouchable, and then just getting clobbered.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm seeing that so much right now. I'm seeing that in the coaching and the mastermind space and the event space for coaches and masterminds right now is there's so much marketing out there. There's so much noise out there. And the marketers are out marketing the quality coaches and masterminds and events. And that's a problem. And we as the consumer are listening to the noise. And so we run over there because this person told me this is how they do it. And they're going to coach me and it's going to cost me X amount of dollars. And I'm going to learn from them. And then at the end of the day, I realize that they're not even 10 steps ahead of me, let alone one step ahead of me. They were just a good marketer. Now I've just given them my $500, my $5,000. And what did I get out of it? A bad process. No real actionable items. I got really hyped because their commercial was super cool and I had nothing to walk away from it.
So I want to talk about the Success Finder at some point, but I want to talk about, I guess, the mastermind coaching space since you brought it up. And let's talk to those people who are listening. You're the people who are either on the consumer or they are a mastermind leader or they are a coach because you have your podcast and it's called, just so people know, it's called the Mastermind Effect Podcast, which they can find everywhere. We'll talk about it at the end as well. What's working in the mastermind coaching space? Like if there are consumers looking for it or people, coaches and mastermind leaders listening to this, like what have you found from all of your podcast episodes, your experience as a consumer? Like what's a good indication for somebody?
Yeah. First, you got to sit there and say, what do you want to get out of it? Like, what are the results that the, I don't like to sit there and say this thought leader, because people throw that term around, thought leader. My 6-year-old has a thought when he gets up in the morning. It doesn't mean that I want to follow his direction, but the result leaders. And who are they? What am I wanting to get out of this? And can I actually implement what they're teaching? If the person's 10 steps ahead of you, way over here in the mastermind space, the people, can they really relate to someone that's in the beginning of their journey, or do I need to find someone else? So I'm seeing out there, and I hope I'm going to answer your question and what you're looking for, at least how I understood it, I can answer it. There is a lot of noise and there's a lot of people out there right now that's saying like, I'm the next big thing. I can teach you how to scale your business to 6 and 7 figures monthly or yearly, however you want to look at it. And they're taking that self-education space and they're taking what knowledge they've learned, and really what they've learned is how to market themselves really well. And they're souring what is really, in my opinion, going to be the future of how we learn and who we learn from. I call it their standardized education. There's trade school and then there's self-education somewhere in the middle of that. And if you get the wrong coach or you get the wrong marketing salesperson, it's going to sour the person on the other end, the consumer, the member that wants to actually go along that journey with you and make sure that they're able to take themselves and level up to whatever it is they want. So I think there are a lot of great coaches out there and masterminds out there. I just think there's probably at the end of the day, the really good ones, some of them are good at marketing or have someone to market for you, but the best ones, sometimes it's tough to know where to find them and know how to work with them. Now, when I say know how to work with them, people are more accessible today than ever before. COVID has guaranteed us of that, where if I want to reach out and instant message Jay Abrams, and I'm not saying Jay's going to respond to me or I know Jay, but if I wanted to message him, I have a better chance today for him to sit there and say, hey, Brandon, great. I love your comment on X, Y, and Z and the value you just brought. Let's connect. But if you find someone in that space that you truly, truly believe in, follow them for a little bit, listen to them a little bit, provide value, comment back, share what they're doing, and reach out to them. Once you've done that, if they align with your mission, vision, and values, they align with the salesperson you want to be or the person that you want to grow into, then it's probably a good fit for you. But if the smellometer is just off and they really don't align with your mission, vision, and values, then you should probably sit there and think twice and say, is this really for me, or do I need to look down a different well and look to find someone else that fits who I am? Because I don't need to become who I'm not. I don't need to sell something because this person sells it this way. If it's not who I am, I don't need to fake who I am. Be yourself, be original, and find that coach and mastermind that fits who you are and go from there.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. And for the coach, mastermind, leader on the other side of this equation, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say that person who wants to be successful, they are skilled at what they do and not just an amazing marketer. Or what I find happens a bunch is they're really good at what they do, coach, consultant, mastermind, leader, and not good at marketing, right? Like yeah. Once you talk to them, they're amazing. Getting to them or even knowing about them is the challenge, right? So it's the marketing and then it's the actual sales conversation. What advice or suggestions or insight do you have for someone in that category so they don't fall in the trap of just being this marketing machine and monster and can find the right people and show that value and differentiate themselves in the noise?
Yeah. So you're asking about the coaches and masterminds kind mm-hmm. of answer yeah. for them. Like, how do they overcome all the noise that's happening out there? Because like I said, my feed is riddled with it right now. Oh. Like, I guess it's not amazing because I just did an episode on this. I'm like, what is going on here? So for the coaches and the mastermind event people that are like, okay, I'm good at what I do, but I can't get my message out there enough. I'd sit there and say, okay, a couple things. If you're good at what you do, but you're doing your own marketing, you need to take that off your plate. Just get rid of it because you probably don't enjoy it. Number one, you probably don't enjoy it and you need to find the right marketing people. Now, that's a whole nother story is finding the right marketing people because you don't want them to dilute or over-accentuate your real message. And you don't want them to make you who you're not and say, hey, well, we need you to record this video this way. And you're like, well, that's not me. And they're like, well, hey, you're going to have more sales if you do it this way. Well, yeah, but then I'm going to attract people. They're going to find me and they'll like what I have to offer, but I'm not going to be that genuine person. So finding the right marketing partner, I think is super key in that. And we can get into a little bit of that with the Success Finder, what we're building over there. But I would say, stick to what you're good at. Everything else, outsource. And you're like, well, that's going to cost me money. If I'm paying someone for their intellectual property to market me and I'm having to pay $2,000 a month in ads, and then I'm having to pay them $1,500 a month because they're running it, now I'm at $3,500 and I can't afford that. Well, can you afford not to do it if you have the right marketing people is the question you should ask yourself. Because number one, you don't enjoy marketing yourself. You have a message. You're really good at helping people. You're good at helping solve their problems, but you're not good at marketing. You're not supposed to be good at marketing. So find that outlet that can help you. There's a lot of them out there, and that's also a problem. There's a lot of noise in the marketing space. So you need to make sure the same way that the consumer needs to do it, you need to make sure that that marketer aligns with your mission, vision, and values to make sure that it's a cohesive relationship on there. And then from there, the thing that I could sit there and say for every salesperson, for every coach, every mastermind, under promise and over deliver, hands down and twice on Sunday. If you under promise and over deliver, you're like, well, wait a minute, then people aren't going to come to me if I don't tell them all these amazing things. They'll come to you. Word of mouth happens. You'll find the right marketing team. Be genuine about it. But if you flip the script, and that's happened to me, where initially the person under promised, way over delivered. Round three, they way over promised and way under delivered. And I can attribute that to about $16,359 in wasted money in different things where the script got flipped on me. Just don't do it. Be genuine, be honest, find the people that can help you market it and move forward.
And I think that's all brilliant advice, especially the part where if you're not good at anything, is to figure out a way to get help and support, outsource. There's different ways to go about it. Inexpensive, expensive. There's a whole range. But I think that's always the biggest thing. I mean, even if you think about what you're doing for somebody as a coach, consultant, or mastermind event, you're helping someone in a way that they're not good at, and you're trying to help facilitate them being successful in what they are good at. And then a lot of people, like the cobbler's kids have no shoes, right? It's like, I'm going to help you in only doing what you do well, except I'm going to try to do it all, and I'm going to wear every hat because I feel like I have to do everything, and I'm a hot mess. I'm going to tell you to do this, and then I'm literally not doing it myself, which is what we all do. I will say I do it. I will admit here on the program, I am a victim of that if I'm not careful, where it's like, I just do it all, right? Or, hey, everyone should be using a CRM. And then it's like, I'm not a really big fan of that, and I don't do it. And just that weird dynamic. And then outsourcing. That's why I'm a big fan of the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber, which is like, what are you good at? And then get help, build systems so that you can just stick in your zone.
Yeah. And don't take on too many things at once. If you're like, okay, I got to perfect my marketing this month. I got to perfect my message this month. I need to create a new course this month. I need to make sure that my significant other and I have an awesome adventure this month. You got to remember family in there, but, and people focus on that. And then I also got to make sure that I have fun this month. Okay.
Yep. Like, and stay in shape, be healthy. And
stay in shape. Yeah. Yep. Okay. I'm going to do a real poor job at all five of those things.
Yep.
Every one of them. You can have those five things going. Okay. But think about it this way. And this is something that I didn't realize I had implemented and also failed at one point in my life. Take that thing, put it into overdrive. Okay. These other ones are still happening, but they're kind of on autopilot. They're not being more successful or they're not growing, but they're just kind of like they're moving along. They kind of like they're just flatlining. They're still happening. All right. When you have optimized piece one, okay, let's say your marketing, you put all the fuel in there, you've optimized that. Now you can probably start putting that on autopilot. And now you put the juice or the fuel behind that second area, get that to where you're able to put it on autopilot. And you get the idea. I don't need to go through all five of those, but put the fuel behind one thing and let the other ones work on autopilot because you can become really good and then it can coast. And then when you've completed those five things, they've all optimized themselves. Guess what? You get to start over again. You get to hit new highs. Take that, put the fuel back in number one again, because now you've got some new things that you need to put behind it. And you'll see it'll zigzag up, flatline, and go from there. That's not my own, but that's something that I didn't realize I had royally messed up in my career, but also I eventually learned it. And now I know how to explain it a little better.
I love it. And I think one of the things I had read once, and then I realized it's so, so true, which is the lie about balance, where there's no such thing as balance if you want to be successful in something. Giving an example, even if you're not in that, you can't think of it, but you can imagine somebody who wants to run a marathon, right? If you want to run a marathon, the training that goes into it, all the prep work, there's no balance in your life. It's not like I'm going to run a marathon and grow my company and have a lot of time with my family and do this vacation. No, like your whole focus is that marathon and your life is out of balance. And as long as you accept that, that's okay. And you make that successful, like you said, and get to that point, right? You run a marathon. Now you know how to do it. Now that part's easy, right? You just got to make sure everyone understands it in your life, which is, this is my focus. My life is out of balance. I'll be back soon, right? Like, that's the key.
People will help you. If you're honest with them and you're like, hey, right. here's what's happening. Here are the areas I'm focusing on right now, but this is what I'm putting the fuel behind. They'll sit there and be like, all right, let me into your life. You were vulnerable. You sat there and showed me what was important, but I know you're still here. All right, two thumbs up. I'm good.
And obviously we're talking to coaches, consultants, also for salespeople in their career, right? Like some of that is just putting fuel into what do I need to learn about? What do I need to get better at this month? Where am I struggling? What do I need to understand about the market or marketing or my consumers? Like what do I put in my pipeline? How do I just put rocket fuel in my pipeline and grow it so that that starts coasting? And then it's just relationships and nurturing versus like planting seeds all day. I can start to harvest.
Yeah, you go from spraying and praying to being a sniper, and you can focus on that singular point from point A to point B. Shorten the bridge, shorten the gap, get to your why, and the rest takes care of itself.
In your experience, both from yourself, right? I'm going to say lifelong sales professional from early on with the Kool-Aid packets as a professional sales and marketing guru to where you're at now. Number one trait, personality, behavior, activity of a successful sales professional?
Yeah. I think people sit there and say you have to be an extrovert and that you have to be a chatty Cathy. And I'm going to dispel that possibly because I'll throw a number out there so it makes it sound like I'm an authority in this area because I am. But if you don't know me, you might sit there and be like, we trust Jason, but does this guy know? We've got over 8,000 clients that we still service to this day in my longest running company. And it started with zero in my house. And for those 8,000, I think there's seven or eight people that oversee all of that. So when it comes to growing a pipeline, when it comes to growing sales, I get it. I know it. We've been there and we still have over 8,000 clients to this day. So that'll, I guess, cement my authority if you don't know who I am. All right. From there, people sit there and say, you got to be outgoing. You got to be comfortable in large rooms and you got to know how to just go straight to who that whale is that you need to get the business from. And then you've got the person that sits there and says, I just don't feel comfortable in crowds and I just don't know what to do. And the biggest one is what value am I going to bring to someone that doesn't even know me in the conversation? So let's look at outgoing person versus introvert. I am an introvert. When I am out in public and out in groups, I expend a lot of energy that takes me 24 to 48 hours, depending on how much I gave. And I would prefer just to spend time with my family and my friends on our street and the people that I get to work with. That to me is peaceful because it's small. I don't have to extend myself and my energy. Now, I, being an introvert, still know that my purpose when I go out there is I need to do that. I just have to prepare the people that are around me that they know without me saying anything anymore that it's going to take me about a day or two to re-energize and kind of get myself back to where I need to be. So if you're an extrovert or introvert, you can win equally. Remember, I said it here 20 minutes ago or so, you sell yourself every day. So you don't have to be a salesperson. You don't have to be an extrovert. You can be an introvert, whatever it is. Don't let the testing methods that companies use, like to see what personality you are, to pigeonhole you on whether you can be a salesperson or not. I think it's just, you don't need it. So from there, I would sit there and say, I want to go to the value thing because I've been there and I sit there. I'm like, well, I'm going to go into a room of people that I don't know and I need to somehow sell them on something, but I'm not sitting there. I've got to sell them on something. I sit there and say, have a plan, like have a goal, a plan, try to find out who is going to be in that room that you might want to connect with, and then figure out how you can have a conversation without ever telling them, I do this and this is where I work and I want to offer you this. Get in the conversation with them. Start having a conversation. Start getting to know them. Don't be the bulldozer. Be the value add in listening and saying, oh, that's interesting. I never thought about it this way. I walk into a room and I want to meet Jason and I want to work with Jason because I want to be on his podcast. And I see 10 other people around Jason and they're having this conversation. They're all eating up what Jason has to say. Well, go over to that conversation and just start listening to what Jason and the other people are saying. Don't try to interject your thoughts like, hey, I'm Brandon and I've been wanting to meet you, so on and so. Just listen. And then throughout the conversation, you can be like, you can make honest comments because they're most likely, if I haven't met you, I haven't digested all of the material that you're doing out there, I can probably sit there and make a genuine comment like, wow, I never thought about it that way, Jason. Can you explain it to me a little bit more? Because I ran into this situation recently and this is what happened. Can you help me with that? Well, now Jason realizes that I have a genuine interest in him. I actually was listening to him. And probably Jason's going to be like, so tell me your name. What do you do? Or where do you work? You'll probably come and ask me who I am and what do I do. I can sit there and say, my name's Brandon Straza. I'm the founder of the Success Finder and host of the podcast, The Mastermind Effect. And I do XYZ. Don't have your XYZ in what you do 2 minutes long. Have a short sentence that says what you do. I help people find out who they should be learning from. And done. You don't say anything else. And then you guys go back to your dialogue. But most likely, because I'm not selling myself, I'm not trying to offer something, you're going to continue to say, what do you mean you help people find out who they should be learning from? And we'll be able to have that dialogue completely genuine, completely without sitting there saying, like, what's Jason trying to get from me? And what am I trying to get from Jason? And the relationship will take the course that it's meant to be. I hope that makes sense. And how a salesperson should go about it, whether they're extrovert, an introvert, or they just don't know if they're a salesperson.
I love it. I think that's brilliant. I think the introvert, extrovert, and what you threw in just kind of in passing, which was the personality test dictating if you can be successful or not. You see a lot of recruiting companies and businesses use that kind of a test as like their determining factor. The thing is that may tell you where your strengths are. And then you've got to realize you, the individual, is that. Are those strengths things that you can leverage and use in a selling role to be successful? Are you willing to do that? Because I think anybody can be successful in sales if they bring who they are. It's not this one archetype. It's not this one person. As you said, which I love, it's not the extrovert running the crowd, standing on the podium, getting everyone's attention, the life of the party. That's what people think it takes to be successful in sales. I actually think it's the opposite. That gets people's attention, but that's not good for long-term and for most what you're selling. And then the value. I think that was a great way that you put it, where it's leading with the value. And because here's what happens normally. I'm thinking just if you had approached me and said, hey, I'm Brandon. I do this. Most salespeople would then go, hey, I am a podcast host. I have this thing. Hey, let me ask you, do you ever think that you need help with your blah, 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 right? Like they instantly just roll into like the sales question.
Yeah.
Instead of just leaving it, right? And letting it just be a conversation.
Yeah. Cause I mean, from that conversation, I said what I do, Jason does. I obviously already know that because I entered into his world. So I know what Jason's doing. But here's the thing, leave it at that. You can message him later on in the evening because most likely you're like, hey, man, do you mind if I ever shoot you a message? I'm going to guess Jason's going to give me the benefit of the doubt and say, sure, absolutely. Now, here's the thing that I'm going to guess Jason already knows. Most people aren't going to follow through. And that salesperson or that individual is just never going to message Jason. They were there, they forgot, they didn't mark it down, and I'll get to it. A week goes by. If I send it now, Jason's going to think I really didn't remember. So maybe I'll just get anxiety and they just don't send the message. Have your list, send it out that night, be genuine. Hey, Jason, appreciate it. It was really cool hearing you talk about X, Y, and Z. Look forward to learning more in the future. I didn't ask you for anything. You hadn't sold me anything. And I reminded you of the conversation that we had. So hopefully that sparked something because Jason probably had a lot of conversations that day. And you're like, oh, this person listened to me. I do remember him. And you can go from there. And it might be 6 months, a year down the road that maybe there's a transaction that happens between the two parties, but you build a genuine relationship and it becomes easier and easier and easier.
I love it. I think that's unique. No one's ever put it that way when I asked that question. And I think that's so important. What does it mean to you to be authentic when you hear that?
Someone mentioned this the other day, and it was someone on a team of mine, and they interviewed someone else for me for the platform we're building, and they sent me the recording so I could listen to it. She's like, hey, I'm glad that you weren't there because you probably would have stopped me in my tracks, but I got to tell someone what I thought about you. I said, okay. And her comment was this, you're the same person when you're hugging your mom, your grandma, your best friend, or a stranger. So no matter what platform, so we'll take it to social and then real life. No matter what platform they meet you on, you're still that same person, whether it's on social or it's a conversation amongst two people and they meet you in real life. You believe in what you say and you don't over accentuate what you can actually do. You are that person. I've used the term, you got to fake it till you make it. I've sat there and that was in my brain in the last 10 years. but you don't have to fake it till you make it. I understand where it has its place. Okay. But what if you don't? Because you don't have to think about the last conversation you had and how you said it. You're just who you are, whether you're hugging your mom and your grandma, or you're hugging your best friend or someone that you just met. And the hugging, because I know we can't do that right now, is more of a metaphor.
Virtual hugs. Yeah, I appreciate that consistency across everything. What about when you hear the word persuasion, or you think about that for sales?
Yeah, when I hear the word persuasion, it's like, how can I get the other person to do what I want them to do? Like, that's my initial thought. But if you flip the script and you sit there and you don't look at the word, because we can look at words and we can say, oh, that's a negative word. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what if we don't think of it from the negative aspect? It's not a negative word. We think it is because that's what someone's trying to persuade me to buy this house. Someone's trying to persuade me to go on this date. Persuasion is just someone sitting there trying to offer and help you get to what you actually need. You have something you need. This person over here has that product or person, and they're just persuading you to say, hey, listen, work with me. I'll help you along that path.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think there's that fine edge between the definition of persuasion and the definition of manipulation, and where it can kind of go back and forth, and people are afraid of the manipulation and the persuasion can feel like it. Some people, their walls are just up so high that when somebody's actually trying to help them, they're still feeling like they're being manipulated, because that's the experience they're expecting. Like you said, helping you buy a house and pushing you to buy this house. Well, you said you wanted that house. I'm pushing you to do it, because otherwise you're going to put your head back in the sand. That could feel like manipulation if you just have a negative connotation of the world or taking action.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we can take any word and we can make it a positive or negative. It depends on where we're at, because we don't know what conversation that person's having in their head. They've already got five conversations going on up there by the time you talk to them. And so you got to make sure that you're not one of those conversations. They realize that you're not going to take up more space. You're going to help free it up for them.
Which goes to something else that you talked about early on when we were discussing kind of talking to that prospective customer who's coming with the questions they know they need to ask. There's this dialogue going on. There's these boxes they need to check in their mind when dealing with a salesperson. Because one thing that most salespeople forget about is that even if they want it, even if they're the only one making the buying decision, at some point they're going to turn and explain what they did to somebody else, hopefully excited, family member, parent, adult child, neighbor, coworker. And they're going to have to defend their choice because everyone else is going to probably crap all over it. And so, like, they're checking boxes. Say, okay, when my Uncle Bob asked me if I got a good deal on my insurance, can I say that I asked for a discount and they said I could possibly get one, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Did I listen to all the noise around me? Did I remember all the noise around me? Because that's what it is. You need to limit the noise on the people that are whispering in your ears and giving you the information, and actually trust yourself. Like, as a consumer, trust yourself. That's what you got to do. Now, if you're over jaded and you've got those walls up, you're never going to invite and welcome what can actually be an opportunity and what can actually be something that can help you. An opportunity can be your car insurance is lower. An opportunity can be a night out with your significant other, because someone's going to help you out, but you're sitting there, you've watched a TV show and something happened to the kid in the TV show. And so you won't go out. I know that's extreme, but it gets its point across.
It does.
You have to figure out how to shut out the noise. And sometimes horse blinders are okay, because you're like, all right, I'm going to trust here, here, and here. Anything that comes on the outside, we're going to keep it over here. So no one to have the horse blinders on and no one to just accept things.
And then the flip side, because mostly listening to this can be salespeople and sales leaders, is realize that your prospects are coming to you with that baggage, that approach, blinders, no blinders, noise, mess, confusion, scared, and you've got to help them feel safe. Otherwise, they're never going to buy. So that's where you just become part psychologist and therapist when you're in sales by default, because you're addressing that.
Yeah, the bartender is a perfect example. You know, you think of Cheers back in the day, and he's really just a therapist. Now, he wants to sell him more drinks, but he's listening to Norm's noise. He's listening to this person's noise, so on and so forth. And so you got to help realize that they just want to be heard. They want you to feel like you're listening to them. And don't be a bulldozer. You'll get so much further.
I love it. So let's talk about your project. So obviously we mentioned the podcast many times. So it's the Mastermind Effect podcast. So they can find it podcast.thesuccessfinder.com. Find it everywhere. Who should listen to that? Who should dial into that and check it out?
Yeah, I would say someone can be an entrepreneur, or remember, I was an entrepreneur and I just didn't believe it and feel it. I didn't feel comfortable with that until a few years ago. So it can be someone that sits there and says, hey, I want to invest in the most important thing in the world. This investment is more important than buying a house. This investment is more important and will get you a higher return on your investment than the stock market and your 401k. It's an investment in yourself. Your ROI in yourself will be the best investment ever, more than the housing industry and more than the stock market. Why is that? You have complete control over yourself. So if you're looking to sit there and say, I can't afford a coach, I'll challenge that and say, how can't you afford to?
Right.
I want to get from here to here. What is it going to cost me to do that? Because it's not going to be free. It's not going to just magically happen. But if you can have the right coach, the mentor, mastermind that's sitting there helping you see around corners because they're 7 and 8 steps ahead of you and they've already stepped in those landmines, they can keep you from stepping in those landmines. Whether you believe you're an entrepreneur or you're working just for a corporation and you want to get that next promotion, but you don't know how to overcome certain challenges, it's for you because you can find a coach or a mastermind event host on the podcast that you're going to jam with. You're going to be like, I really resonate with their message, because we start broad. We start, hey, how do you learn today versus previously? So you get to know about them. Who are you learning from? If there's already like sirens going off and you're like, oh, well, I don't learn that way and I would learn that person, then guess what? You probably skip to the next episode.
Yep.
But then you get to find out how they impact and success stories of what they do. So I start wide with a funnel so you get to know a little more about them and then what they actually do for a living. So if you want to level up and actually change your trajectory, you want to change your function, you want to get from point A to point B faster and know who can help you, then this show's for you.
Love it. And then the other big thing, the main project, we've mentioned it several times, but explain what Success Finder is. And for everyone watching or listening, it's thesuccessfinder.com. So what is that for? Because you mentioned it's lining people up with tools to help them.
So it came out of realizing a couple of years ago my unfair advantage, which was time and money. And it's not that I had an abundance of either, but I realized I had built up over 20 years of a little bit more time and money than maybe the next person. And as I was leaving a mastermind, I sat there and realized that that's not cool. Not everyone has that ability to have the time and money built up over time. And so what if we create a place that whether it was your $500 or your $5,000, both of those dollar amounts are equally important to us. And what if you knew the person that you were going to invest in yourself, but the person that was going to help you get there, the group that was going to help you get there, was trusted, true, and verified, and that they were actually going to be the results leaders, not the thought leaders, that are going to help you see around corners and get to where you want to go. So I'm sitting in an airport. It's midnight. I'm bounced for my flight, and I just start buying up URLs. And from that came the Success Finder, where it's going to end up being, and the beta is going to launch in January of 2021. It's going to be a matching rating knowledge-based center. The matching portion will take a little bit longer. We're going to be working with psychologists and really smart people. One of the co-founders of Amazon World Services before it sold and became what it is today back in, I don't know, 2000, 2001, is helping do some of the tech side of it because that's not my jam. You outsource that. You find out who does it best. But it's going to be to where I don't want to sit there and say a swipe left or swipe right. But if you're like, hey, this is who I am, this is what I'm looking for, it's going to help match through an algorithm to make sure that, hey, here are the top choices for you. Now, the rating system, you got them all over the place. You got TripAdvisor, you've got Yelp, you've got all the different types of things on there. So we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just a 1 through 5 star. We're going to have a few more things behind it once you get on the platform. But we needed to make sure that you saw who's believing in these people, because we're going to have proof of purchase. We're going to have proof that someone has gone through this and they weren't better marketers and they paid 100 people over here to actually give them those ratings and reviews. And then the Knowledge Center is what I call the Library of Congress. It's the back door. Some people, they come in the front door and they sit there and they're like, I'm looking for this subject matter, this type of a coach or mastermind, this price point. Here's what I need. All right, and come in the front way and you can find it that way. Or if you're like me, I actually like to go search blogs, vlogs, and videos. Once I found the subject matter of what I'm looking for, I'm like, oh, well, who the heck did this? And they're able to reverse engineer and say, oh, okay, well, I really jam with this. I want to reach out to them. and they're able to go that way. So it'll be one of the first of its kinds. It's called the Success Finder. It's my passion. It's my why. It's going to be a for-purpose business to where we're going to reinvest in the community. So we're going to keep a portion of our proceeds, and it's going to go to reinvest in the members. Membership is free. You don't have to pay to even be on the platform as a member, but we're going to hold money back so you can build soft dollars to reinvest continuously in yourself off of what we're bringing in. And then we'll also create the for-purpose side of the company. We'll create a foundation that we hold a portion of the proceeds back. So someone that's 13, 14, 15 in a neighborhood, in a school district that doesn't have everything that possibly maybe you or I had, to where we knew we had coaches or mentors or people around us to help build us up, that we're able to get to that generation quicker, because someone at the age of 14 might have more life experiences than someone at the age of 28 because of what was afforded to them or right. what situation they were born into. And we want to shorten that gap and make sure that we're able to help out there. So I'm super excited. It started March of 2019 is when the idea came to me at midnight in Thailand. And we're almost 2 years later that it's off the shelf in my head. And it's actually a real thing to help people find out who they could and who they should be learning from.
That's awesome. That's so great. And people, make sure to check it out, thesuccessfinder.com. Coming out soon, depending on when you watch this. Brandon, thanks for joining me. Thanks for being on here. Thanks for the insight. I love the perspective you brought. Obviously, things that I totally jibe with, but just a different way of looking at it and your experiences. So I appreciate that. Thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Jason. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.